Hi, everyone, and welcome to Press X, the Geek Show's dedicated video games podcast. My name's Rob, and joining me today is Mark.
Hello.
Now, for all you people who normally listen to Keyframe, you've probably heard us together on that show. But this isn't Keyframe. We're not talking about animation or anime or anything like that. But we are. But we're not. But we are.
Or are we?
No, we definitely are, because I've got two anime. I've got a game that's based on two anime and another game that is very much anime style. And you've got a game that's based on an anime, which is a sequel to a game. No, you've got a game that is a sequel to a game that is based on an anime, and you've got people with long arms.
Yes, we've certainly got some people with long arms and long
we're not,
hair and
that's not feature. No, that's not a One Piece reference, though.
It's not a One Piece reference, yeah.
No, because the long arm tribe in One Piece, isn't there?
I thought you were talking about Luffy.
No, I was talking about the long arm tribe in One Piece.
Yeah, we're not talking about One Piece.
No, we're not.
Yeah. Surprisingly enough, we're talking about arms.
Yes. So, do you want to kick us off with arms?
Yes, arms. For those who don't know what arms is, you've probably got some.
Unless...
I do an arms pun.
I'm sorry, but yeah, you've probably got some. Unless you've had an accident of some sort, or, you know, there were unfortunate circumstances, you know, at birth.
By which we are very sorry.
Yeah, we don't mean to cause offence. Let's just get that out of the way. I'm sorry, I shouldn't laugh, but... You know when you have that laugh? You're like, we shouldn't be saying this.
We've already managed to piss off 1% of our entire audience.
Yes.
So yeah, ARMS, the new IP from Nintendo, because believe it or not, Nintendo do new IPs.
Yeah.
Once in a while.
I'm just waiting for the sequel. Legs.
Arms and legs.
Yes. And then they're going to have the crossover, arms versus legs.
More arms versus legs.
And then you're going to get the Scottish localization, which is called Headbutt.
The new at the end.
Yes.
Oh, God, we'll get rid of the Scottish listeners now, aren't
we? No. Right. That is
the Scottish. In their droves.
No, that is the Scottish martial art, isn't it? You know, headbutt and kick them while they're on the floor.
Yeah, kind of it is. In certain parts of Scotland, anyway.
Yes.
So, yeah, ARMS, what can I say about it? It's a fighting game from Nintendo, unlike Super Smash Brothers.
Because this is the fighting game from Nintendo that everyone knows.
Yeah, that's the fighting game that Nintendo does that everybody knows. And, well, I would say it's probably one of the more well-known fighting games out there.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is actually a new IP where it's more of the 1v1, kind of more... I would say a little bit more like Street Fighter type of fighting. But it's also got that whole Nintendo charm of having the whole, the twist things. In that all of your characters, it's set more like a little bit more of a first person or third person type of view, where you're going around like a wrestling type arena and just knocking each other up with your extendable arms or legs or hair or whichever appendage you've got which extends it with for these characters.
See, I've heard arms described as, you know, those giant balloon men on the fans that are just the wacky waving arm things that you see outside some car dealerships sometimes.
Yeah.
I've heard arms described as that crossed with Wii Sports boxing.
Yeah, it's definitely, you can definitely see where it was inspired from, the Wii Sports boxing and the Wii. Maybe it's just the weird sight, it's still just punching each other. It's kind of, to explain it to the more geeky people, it's a fight between Monkey D. Luffy and Mr. Fantastic. Which I'm surprised is somehow not in the game. But yeah, this one, I'm not going to lie, I'm not really a fighter person. I can get with Super Smash Bros. And the more casual ones where it's very easy to pick up and play. But stuff like Tekken and Street Fighter just goes over my head because, like, I just can't get into them. I find them very difficult to sit down and pick them up.
I'm kind of the same. I'll play stuff like Tekken, Dead or Alive, Street Fighter, you know, Guilty Gear, that sort of thing. I'll sit down and I'll play them and I'll enjoy them while I'm playing them. But I'm not hardcore into them. I'm not into the whole, the timing, the whole art form, apparently, of the fighting game, of being, you know, the whole button sequence and getting the timing right and stuff like that. I'm just thinking, Life's too short, man.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. I'll just button mash for a lot of them.
Yeah.
Because it's quite simple. It's that a lot of them I haven't played, and a lot of them have different button configurations. So if, for example, I'm playing Street Fighter, and then I go on to Tekken, it's slightly different buttons. So it's kind of like, I'm just like, I don't know what I'm doing. I'll just button mash and hope for the best. And usually,
if you win, it's glorious. And if you lose...
Yeah, they usually, that gets you quite far, just button mashing.
Oh, yeah. What was it? The local university, when I was attending the local university back in the early noughties, my second stint, I have to say, at uni. but not at the same uni either. But they had, in the student union, they had a Tekken tournament. It was when Tekken Tag came out. And my housemate was a button masher extraordinaire. He was just, that's all he did. He didn't have a clue about fighting games. And he won the tournament, just button mashing. And you had these guys who were super, super serious. Like, no, I lost to some guy who doesn't know what he's doing.
He knew he was winning. But yeah, it's like, I don't know why. It's just one of those things. It's just not something I can really get into. I don't know why. I just find them a bit confusing to get into. But this was incredibly easy to get into. Maybe, I don't know, like it says, it's Nintendo and they seem to have a huge thing of making things easy to get into. I don't know, but it's one of those ones where it's easy to get into, but quite hard to master.
Yeah.
Because I'm not going to lie, I went online being all chuffed after I finished the campaign and got myself absolutely massacred in every single fight.
Well, you got to, haven't you?
Yeah, you've got to. I mean, there's a reason that online service is in there, and it's to get yourself beat up.
It's a rite of passage, man. You know, you've got war stories you can tell. You've got scars.
But yeah, it's very over the top. It's very, I wouldn't say childish, but it's very, like, a lot of the characters are quite unique in that, something like Street Fighter, where a lot of the characters are all martial artists.
Yeah.
Whereas this one, we've got a ninja, we've got ectoplasm, or I think it's ectoplasm, we've got a mummy, we've got a girl, half robot, we've got a noodle girl who has arms made out of noodles. And all of the characters are all, like, over the top stupid.
It's not Noodle from Gorillaz, is it?
No, it's like a little, like, I don't know what, where she's from, a little Asian girl with actual noodles.
Yeah, that's why I asked. It's not Noodle from arms. It's not Noodle from the band Gorillaz, is it?
It's not.
Because when you said it's a little Asian girl, like, that still sounds like Noodle.
But yeah, all of the characters that all feel completely unique with their own, like you said, they're just so unique, but that's also over the top as well. I think that's one of the things what I like about it. It's like, where, like you said, stuff like Street Fighter or Tekken, a lot of the characters eventually started feeling, it was like, oh yeah, it's another martial artist from this place. Whereas this one's like, yeah, this guy, he's made out of ribbons. That's about it. And yeah, it's just one of those easy to pick up, stupid, fun to play games. I'm not going to say there's a huge amount to it. I think Nintendo's kind of doing what they did with Splatoon, where they kind of released, I wouldn't say maybe the bare bones, and then as they're going along to keep the game going, they're releasing free DLC.
Yeah.
So you're getting free, like, extra characters and extra modes once a month or once every other month and stuff like that. So yeah, it's like, at the moment, it's I wouldn't say entirely bare bones. You're pretty much getting what you would get in another standard fighting game, but there is a lot more to come, and it's fun to play. And I just want to point out, with it being on the Switch, it's nice to be able to sit down and just chill in bed and pick it up and just play it for half an hour. Just get your face punched in for 10 minutes, which, yeah, it's quite a nice little thing to be able to do that.
Now, I just want to come back to Noodle a second. I'm not letting this go. Which is, are you sure it's not Noodle? Because according to Wikipedia, Noodle from Gorillaz, right? In 2003, Noodle visited Japan in an attempt to discover her past after being haunted by disturbing nightmares while on tour. While in a restaurant, she regained her last memory after hearing the words "ocean bacon." She coincidentally met with her mentor, Mr. Kyuzo, who was working as the head chef in the restaurant. Kyuzo helped her make sense of her lost memories. Noodle is, in fact, part of a secret government super soldier project, trained specially as a musician.
I can't even remember what it's called. I really should probably have looked this up.
I mean, you understand why I'm just kind of, are you sure this Noodle Girl isn't actually Noodle from Gorillaz? Because that would be amazing.
She's called Min Min.
Oh, that's a shame. See, if it was Noodle from Gorillaz.
I know Gorillaz haven't done much recently.
But it would be amazing if the Gorillaz characters just started appearing in video games just randomly.
But yeah, that would be funny. I mean, it was like, we haven't seen them for a while. What are they doing? Oh, well, actually, one of them's in Arms with their Noodle Arms.
Yeah.
But yeah, Arms, is just like I said, a lot of the characters, I'm just looking at some of the other ones. There's a robot policeman with his robot dog. That's another one. There's a girl who's part mech. There's Ribbon Girl. And of course, there's the girl who all the artists love straight away because her feature is she uses hair and has an ass.
The blonde one with the pigtails, is that?
That's the one, the movie, I think she's from Mexico, I can't remember where she's from, but she's the movie star with the ass.
Yeah.
That's all that people know who you're on about. Just
she's the one in all the ass. Yeah, she's the one in all the adverts.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ah, so recommend from you is Arms then.
Yeah, maybe not at full price. I'd still see it. Maybe this is just me talking about like fighters in general. I got this for £25, so I'd say that was probably the maximum I'd be willing to spend on it. But if you're really, really into your fighters, I think you might be able to get quite a bit more out of it.
Okay. All right. Excellent. For me, then, I am going to pick up on something that, I don't know. I don't know how to go about this because I'm going to piss off a few people.
Oh, so, no.
Fair warning with this. If you're a fan of Reki Kawahara's work, then, you know, I'm not ripping on Sora Online or Axel World. Well, I am kind of, but I'm not. But I am kind of, but I'm not. See what I mean about this anime, but there isn't, but there is, but there isn't, but there is. Because, obviously, I'm talking about Axel World versus Sora Online. Now, Wibbly Japanese stuff seems to be my métier. I'm not sure how that's happened, but that's just the way things are at the moment. So if anybody out there likes their Wibbly Japanese stuff and wants to join in the party, then send an email to studio@thegeekshow.co.uk, you know, with an application. No, cut that. I'll do that at the end. Now, Wibbly Japanese stuff seems to be my métier. I'm not sure how it's happened, but I seem to end up with all of the Wibbly Japanese stuff. And Axel World versus Sora Online is one of the wibbliest.
The wibbliest.
That's how I'm going to describe all games from now on in terms of wibble. You know, on a
you don't
scale
mean
of,
weebiest.
No. Wibbliest. Definitely wibbliest. You know, wibbly. See, the wibbly is a nice word because it incorporates weeb. It encapsulates it, you know, like something that encapsulates things.
I'm just imagining a weeb doing the Blackadder sketch from the Ray goes forth and just sitting and just go, wibble.
Oh, no, you got to do it with the plosive consonants that Rowan Atkinson does, wibble. See, there, that's the laugh everyone does when he says things like that. You know, nice to meet you, Bob.
Oh,
see, so anyway,
good old reminiscing about Blackadder.
It's weirdly relevant. It's weirdly relevant to this. The reminiscence part, anyway. See, Axel World, when it came out as an anime, you know, it received some criticism because of the main character Hariyuki, because of his design. Sword Art Online gets all sorts of criticism because it's Sword Art Online, and the whole idea was that the two of them are kind of in the same timeline, but Axel World is in the future. Sora Online is kind of at the beginning where the Nerve Gear is created, where you have this whole full dive VR MMO type thing, whereas Axel World is where you've got to the point of brain burst, so people have like chips implanted in them instead of using Nerve Gears, stuff like that, right?
Right.
So that's the evolution of technology, and that's stumbling block number one. So remember that. Now, the story in Axel World versus Sora Online is it starts off in Alfheim Online, and Asuna and Kirito and Yui, their artificially intelligent pixie daughter type whatever the hell she is these days, they've gone on a picnic, but suddenly monsters appear. But monsters shouldn't be there, so Yui knows that something's wrong. So they kill the monsters, go back to town, and Yui basically sends out a message saying all players should log off, blah, 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 because she's secretly got the power. And so Kirito and Asuna are like, she once is gone for some reason, you know. So they pretend to log off. They go to the thing, leave her alone, leave Yui alone, that is, and they pretend to log off. And they secretly follow her because, you know, Kirito, obviously, as the dad, he's thinking, has my virtual daughter got a virtual boyfriend or something? Is there something wrong? Well, no, he doesn't think that, but this is Kirito I'm talking about. So maybe he did. We don't know. Turns out he doesn't. Basically, what's happened in Axel World versus Sword Art Online is there has been an invasion from somewhere else. And where that is, nobody knows. But there's a person who has invaded. And that person who has invaded is Kuroyuki Hime from Axel World and Silver Crow from Axel World.
Right.
And somehow they've ended up in Alfheim Online. And Kuroyuki is thinking that Kirito and Asuna are these NPC fairies, doesn't realize that they're actually human players. Yui is trapped inside a tower with a big kind of alien angel black thing with a face, without a face, in front of it by this person who is... By this person...
You're struggling to describe such a thing.
Well, she kind of doesn't fit, right? This person calls herself the Twilight Witch. Her name is... what was her name? I'm trying to find her name. her name is Persona Vabel, right? And she is a new original character. And basically, the worlds of Axel World and Sword Art Online begin to collide because she has captured Yui, who is the only creature, person, thing that could stop her plans for something called the Twilight of the Gods. And all of a sudden, the virtual worlds of Sword Art Online, or Alfheim Online in this case, and Axel World start crossing over into each other. They start combining. And that bit gets you. You start thinking, okay, right, this is an opportunity. There's going to be all sorts to explore, blah, blah, blah. Yeah?
Yeah.
But you remember Sora Online, was it Lost Song?
I didn't play them, but I heard they were pretty good.
See, this is the full title of this game is Axel World versus Sora Online Millennium Twilight, right?
Right.
Now, Sora Online Lost Song is...
Is that the one that was released last year, or was that the one released the year before?
So basically, Sora Online, the games went kind of Hollow Fragment, then Hollow Realization. Lost Song was a thing as well, somewhere in there. And Lost Song, I think, was the last one that I reviewed on the PS Vita. That was released in 2015 on the PlayStation 3 and the PlayStation Vita. And at the time, that was fine, right? It was enjoyable, but you had these vast areas that weren't really filled with many monsters. All the monsters used to be grouped together and you used to have to tackle the group and then move on to the next group and move on to the next group. And this Axel World versus Sword Art Online is exactly like that. In fact, even in terms of the graphics, it's as if it's PS3, the PS3 or PS Vita version of Sword Art Online Lost Song with some upside-down corroded skyscrapers thrown into the mix.
And right.
That really annoyed me. I've got to be honest, because the game that came out last year for the Vita and the PS4, Hollow Realization, was a massive step forward, right?
Mm-hmm.
A massive step forward. It actually, the world, when you go out into the wilds of that game, of that game world, they actually felt vibrant. They actually felt like there was life there. There were things roaming around. There were other characters roaming around the wilderness, right? Fighting monsters right. And stuff like that. It felt like you were actually playing an online game, even though it wasn't an online game. The world actually felt populated, but in Axel World versus Sora Online, the world feels very, very barren. And I think that's a big missed opportunity here, because you've got two diverse franchises that are connected by kind of a shared history type thing, yeah?
Yeah.
And you have great scope to actually make a really interesting game. The storyline is actually quite interesting, but it's not enough to hold your attention. There's been a multiplayer that's been crowbarred into this as well, which isn't really that satisfying because not many people are using it. So you either run to somebody who's severely overpowered or run to somebody who's much weaker than you, and you basically kill them with like a couple of hits.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the multiplayer isn't really worth doing anything. You do have like a kind of Monster Hunter style multiplayer thing where you can go with a bunch of friends and take down a giant monster. And that's kind of fun the first time, but then you just think, well, why am I playing this? Why aren't I playing Monster Hunter?
Yeah, is it a bit like that One Piece game they released a few years ago?
Which one?
Red.
Oh, yeah. It's kind of like that. See, the world feels very, very Spartan. And even when you're in, you know, the town hub, right, where all the players are supposed to gather, even that feels kind of empty. You know, it doesn't feel like it's populated at all. And again, Hollow Realization actually made that feel like it was a vibrant world. And I've just got to look at this and think, this is a real big missed opportunity. See, here's the thing, right? You could have these worlds starting to bleed into each other, right? So you could have the barren, desolate, post-apocalyptic wastelands, you know, and ruined cities of Axel World, because that was the aesthetic for Axel World, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Right? So you could have those, and those areas you could treat as the biggest threat in those areas is not the monsters, the biggest threat is other players. Right?
Yeah.
So you could have NPC characters in those areas who basically go out and start duels with you.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see what I mean? And those, each of those NPC characters, could, you know, NPC characters that you fight in that kind of environment could be like mini bosses. So it's basically a tough fight. And you can try and avoid them, but if they see you, they'll go for you. That it's basically a kill or be killed environment, which would raise the tension and make a very different. You know, it'd make it very different in terms of gameplay, just for those, desolate areas.
Things a little bit more unique.
Yeah, and then you could then have the normal kind of fantasy areas of Alfheim Online in the style of Lost Song. Maybe blend in a bit more of Hollow Realization though, so that you have a world that feels like it's populated. But then you've got two diverse, you know, types of gameplay. And you can spend time questing in one, you can spend time in the other, and you can cross over between the two after a certain point of the game, right? That would have been great, but sadly, that's not the case, because the gameplay stays pretty static all the way through the game. The flight controls are kind of clunky. The combat is repetitive at best. Again, it's Hollow Realization may have had a confusing as crap relationship system. I didn't understand it at all. Something to do with circles and more circles and more circles. Don't think anybody understood it. Not sure. Let's put it this way. I understand the materia system for Final Fantasy VII. Right? I understand how that crap works. And that is not a good system, right? The materia system is not a good system. But I understood it. Didn't get the relationship system in Sword Art Online Hollow Realization. But again, at least I had one, you know?
Yeah, at least it was like a little extra thing if you wanted to date whichever Sword Art character you wanted the most.
I mean, Axel World versus Sword Art Online, it's got great intentions. You know, the intent is there to do something, but the will seems to have got lost somewhere. It seems like they've just gone, oh, Axel World, oh, Sword Art Online, they're very popular, let's mash them together. You know, let's do that. Let's mix these together. We'll crowbar in a story that seems to be interesting, and it is kind of interesting, you know, but it's all a bit lackluster. It's a game that's designed to appeal to fans of Sword Art Online and fans of Axel World, but it's not really designed to appeal to anyone else, and that is a real shame.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that's quite alarming for me is what I've noticed, especially in the Sword Art Online, is that this seems to be coming a yearly franchise.
Yeah, but the thing is, if they'd built on Hollow Realization, if they'd actually made advancements from Hollow Realization, right? Because don't get me wrong, Hollow Realization may not be a great game in terms of other games, in terms of games like The Witcher and stuff like that, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of other Sora Online games, it's the best by a long way.
I mean, from what I've gathered, even in terms of anime-based games, it is pretty good. There is a lot of really bad anime games out there.
I've played most of them and reviewed them for us, remember? This is me you're talking to. That's why I'm going, I wouldn't say it's among the best. There are better out there.
I wouldn't say one of the best, but it is one of the better ones, though. A little bit more capable than some of the others.
Oh, God, yeah, definitely more capable. It is one of the better ones out there. If I was going to suggest an anime-based game for people to give it to try, Hollow Realization would be on that list.
Yeah.
Because it's a familiar IP for a certain niche group of fans, and they can basically dive straight into it. And, okay, there's continuity stuff that you shouldn't question. Just go with it, right? Axel World vs. Sora Online, it's out on the PS4 and I think the PS Vita as well. Yeah, it's out on the PS4 and the PS Vita. There are people who are going to like this game. But the developer is Artdink, and it's published by Bandai Namco. And Bandai Namco, fine, they publish all sorts of stuff as well. But seriously, Artdink. Artdink.
How do you spell that?
Artdink.
I've seen what else they've done.
Yeah.
They've been around forever.
Yeah, I know. They've been around since like 1988 or something like that. But anyway, seriously, Artdink, I know that you made Sora Online Lost Song, right? But you could have looked at Hollow Realization and gone, okay, this is how we should be making the Sora Online games. We shouldn't be recycling Lost Song again. We should make it more like this and then go back to the drawing board and make that game.
Yeah.
Because really, Axel World vs. Sora Online, aside from the storyline, aside from the aesthetics, aside from a bunch of extra bits that you can do, it is the whole mechanics of it is basically just Lost Song recycled.
Yeah.
Which is a shame. Missed opportunity. And there's nothing I hate more than wasted potential.
Yeah, it's a shame. I mean, I'm looking at these guys, and I mean, these are the guys who brought Atrium to us, and that was one of those series where it's just like, where you can see over the years they have managed to improve over and over again.
Yeah.
And it's a shame they just can't apply that to Sword Art Online.
Yeah. Anyway, it's your serve, Mark.
Yes, I'm gonna unleash the Black Adder and go back to, well,
please not the euphemisms. No, you keep your Black Adder in your pants.
Cast your minds back about 10 years ago. The PlayStation 3 was still relatively young, and there wasn't a huge amount of great titles for the PlayStation, but for me, one of the ones that did stand out was Valkyria Chronicles.
Yeah, it came out of left field and took a lot of people by surprise when it came out, didn't it? And it was an early release for the PS3. I think that's what got people, was the fact that Valkyria Chronicles, it appeared on the PS3. Nobody knew what the hell Valkyria Chronicles was, but then people started playing it and going, this is a bloody good game. Why have I never heard of this before?
Even on the PS3, I mean, at least over here, it kind of fell under the radar a little bit, and it wasn't, I don't think it was really appreciated until it was released on Steam or the PS4 a few years ago.
But the thing is, if you look at all those lists that where people go, you know, the top 100 games you should play on the PS3 before it dies a death, or the top 10 games on the PS3 or something like that. Valkyria Chronicles is, or the top 50 games on the PS3, I should say. Valkyria Chronicles is usually on those lists.
Yeah. I mean, put it this way, I got Valkyria Chronicles not long after I got the PS3. I sold Uncharted 2 to buy Valkyria Chronicles, and I do not regret that decision ever.
Yep. Well, a lot of people don't.
And I think that would be different to a lot of people. But yeah, Valkyria Chronicles was one of those series where it was really praised for its turn-based tactical warfare in quite a serious environment.
Yeah.
It was one of the few games, at least at the time, that really took war seriously. I mean, it's not like Call of Duty where you're kind of like a one-man killing machine where one person can just take out everything.
Oh no, strategy and tactics were important.
Valkyria Chronicles had the whole squad take part.
The squad mechanic, and that was the weird thing, I think, that a lot of people didn't expect but somehow warmed to. was the squad-based mechanic and the fact that it took strategy and tactics very seriously.
Yeah.
You know, I think that was one of the things that a lot of people didn't expect. But then it was kind of... have you played XCOM?
I haven't, but the series I always make similarities to for Valkyria Chronicles is Advance Wars for the Game Boy Advance.
Yes, Advance Wars. Valkyria Chronicles plays a bit... It's a weird kind of cross between XCOM and Advance Wars.
Yeah, or Fire Emblem and Advance Wars, where obviously Advance Wars, you could just spam the same tanks or same units over and over again and eventually win, whereas Fire Emblem, once they're dead, they're dead. It's kind of... Yeah, but like you said, it's like XCOM, Fire Emblem.
Oh, yeah, that was another thing.
All in one glorious hall.
Yeah, that was another thing about Valkyria Chronicles, was the permadeath, wasn't it?
Yeah, once they're dead. It is very difficult. It was very difficult to kill them off and keep them dead, but... If you left them too long, they would actually die. But yeah, I mean, it was the whole game was really highly praised for what it was. And then obviously it was popular enough to get a second game, which came out on the PSP, and a third game, which unfortunately was PSP Japan only released.
Yeah.
And now we come to Valkyria Revolution. So this is, I believe it's made by the same people. It's published by Sega. And this is a spin-off to the series. I'm not going to say it's not Valkyria Chronicles 4. We'll want to get that out of the way. But we will mention similarities to it because it is supposed to be in the same general universe.
Yeah.
And this game has changed so much to the point that it is a Valkyria game, but the only similarities is that it's got a Valkyria and it's got Ragnite. So this takes place hundreds of years after the war from the first game.
Okay.
And it's a little bit more of a futuristic slash fantasy type world in which the Ragnite has been mined, it's all been used for technological advances, whereas obviously the original game was kind of like you could literally just say this is the World War II with a little bit more of an anime feel to it.
Yeah.
And the Valkyria, which was just its own little thing. But this is kind of more like, this is a war with swords and shields and bows and arrows, and it's still modern. And it just feels all weird to say, you're saying, oh yeah, this is hundreds of years in the future, but it kind of feels that it's just like not. It's just like, it doesn't even feel like it's in a realistic world. It just feels like it's similar to something maybe like, I would say it's similar to something like maybe... the Tales of series or Final Fantasy, it's all like very steampunk-ish.
Okay.
So the whole story revolves around another war, and there are these characters who are known as the traitors because they do this thing in the war which is apparently completely unspeakable and causes all of this war to break out. And you play as a small group of anti-Valkyria squads, because Valkyria are now commonplace, apparently, even though you only see one in the entire game.
Okay.
That the fact that we make entire squads to take them out.
I've got to ask, the traitors, okay, they did something unspeakable which started the war.
Well, this is the main problem with this game, because whereas Valkyria Chronicles, it give you little segments, so you would, like, for a cutscene, you would probably be watching it for maybe 5 minutes at most. And it was like a little comic style, wasn't it? It was like a history book, wasn't it?
Yes.
This one goes completely over the board with the plot. I'm not going to lie. I've clocked about 50 hours in it, and I would probably see it about 30 of those hours as sitting watching cutscenes.
Wow. Was that the unspeakable crime that started the war, making you sit through cutscenes?
Well,
or did they steal the Queen's last Rolo?
From what I gathered, it's these five of them. They're that unremarkable, I can't remember how many of them there was. Five orphans, where the orphanage kind of got destroyed and the whole town got destroyed, and they are plotting revenge against the people who did it and took their nanny away from them. And that's their motive of going to war. It's like, oh yeah, these people did all these horrible things, so we're going to go out and kill them all. And we don't really care if it starts a war in the meantime. And... yeah, I mean, like I said, the cutscenes go on for ages. The first cutscene in the game, I believe, was just about an hour.
What?
And by the end of that, I was sat there, I was just like, yeah, I don't really care anymore. It's like, some of the cutscenes are great, some of them are quite exciting. It never gets to the level Valkyria Chronicles got, but it was just like, I'm playing a game. If this was an anime, I'll be fine to sit and watch it. Or if this was a live action, I'll be fine to watch it, but I don't play games to sit and watch a cutscene.
Yeah.
For so long. And this goes on. For every main mission, there is a cutscene. There must be about 20 minutes on each side. And some of the missions are only like 10, 15 minutes long. And it just really annoyed us. And by the end, I just didn't care about the plot. I was like I was watching the cutscenes just to get to the gameplay.
Yeah, I hate games where they do that, where it's just cutscene after cutscene after cutscene.
It's just like, I mean, at least it gives you the chance. Sometimes it'll go to the cutscene, it'll do a cutscene, then it'll stop, and then it'll give you a chance to save, because it knows that you're probably either that bored or you're that fed up, you just want to skip it. But getting onto the gameplay. So we spoke Valkyria Chronicles was very strategy-focused. This is not.
Is this like third-person action type thing?
This is...
hack and slash.
More, yeah, it feels like it's a Musou game.
Okay.
You've got your cast, there's about 12, 13 characters from this anti-Valkyria squad, and you pick four of them, and each of them have slightly different abilities. Like one of them says like they're a scout, one of them's a sapper, so they're trying to keep the whole Valkyria Chronicles type of thing of the classes. But yeah, all you're doing is you're just running up to enemies and slashing them with the sword, or using magic on them, or shooting them, or using grenades. And it just doesn't work. See, now, it's not bad,
yeah.
But imagine this. Imagine you were playing a Musou game.
Yeah.
However, they try to throw the active time system from Final Fantasy at you.
Oh, God.
So you're standing there slashing at these characters. Then you've got to wait a few seconds to slash again. Meanwhile, they're just standing there shooting you. That is the majority of the battle sequences for the game. And to be honest, it gives you 12, 13 characters, but you, at no point do you ever need to change out of the four that you pick.
Yeah.
I think there was one or two missions in the entire game where it forced us to use different characters, at which point the other characters were that underleveled. I had to literally go out and grind just to level them up a bit. Dude. But even then, it didn't really matter because the level was quite easy.
That's pretty poor game design, though. I mean, you've got a team, the game should force you to raise the levels of the members of your team that may not be commonly used.
They do get some levels, but like towards the end, I mean, most of my characters were like level 40, while as the others were like level 32.
Yeah.
Which in an RPG, obviously, as you all know, that does make a big difference. But it's just like Valkyria Chronicles had all the strategy, whereas this, all you have to do is you just need to run up and like just smack them in the face with your sword. Eventually, I mean, I stopped using grenades and guns quite quickly because there was literally no point to using them. It gives you sandbags and like walls to crouch behind, but there's no point because you might as well just run straight in front of all of the people shooting you and just use a wide area magic thing, which will just kill everything anyway. I can see where they're trying to go with it, but it's a lot of good ideas, but not executed well. The other thing I didn't like was that the bosses, not a challenge, go on forever.
Wow.
Like, I was on a boss fight on the other day, and I was on that boss fight for 20 minutes. Not a challenge. I wasn't dying. It was literally the health bar was that massive, and the damage you were doing was that minimal. It was just really dragging it out. And eventually I was just sat there, I was just like, yeah, this is just getting... I'm just fed up with this. And then almost immediately in a free reign mission, that boss popped up again. I was like, oh, it's just like a free mission. They're not going to make it difficult. Yeah, it took exactly the same amount of time to beat it. They didn't even give you easier versions of the bosses for like the optional quests.
Ooh, that's harsh.
So the game fails. I mean, I don't hate the game. It's a very... While I say it does have like the active time system, it is much like a Musou game. You can sink quite a bit of time into it, and it is quite fun just to be able to go over and just kill enemies without much difficulty. But a lot of the game just feels so padded out. It's like the cutscenes take ages, the bosses take ages. Between the levels, you have to grind.
Yeah.
And there's very limited missions in what to do. for example, the next thing I need to do is fight the final boss. The final boss is level 60. The last story mission before that was level 50, and it's taken me 3 to 4 missions to level up one level.
Ouch.
And that's just to get up. So I could have probably finished this game a lot quicker if I wasn't having to repeat quests just to get through it.
Jeez.
The one thing I can say about it is, much like in previous Valkyria Chronicles games, they do have the squad quite fun.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say, oh, these are some of the greatest gaming characters I've ever met. But they're kind of doing things a little bit like Fire Emblem, in which after the missions, you might get a cutscene, you'll not get a cutscene, you get like an optional thing where they're in the promenade and the shopping or whatever, and they're just having general conversations with each other. And it's like, I really enjoyed that. I enjoyed watching them, these characters, discussing just mundane things more than I enjoyed the actual plot that was going on.
Is it a bit like, you know, the skits in the Tales series?
It's like that, but it's either like that or it's like Fire Emblem, if you get, like, you know, where you get the two characters where they're having like long conversations and the goofy conversations. It's like that. I can't complain about the characters. I mean, they're not the best, but they're not bad either, and we'll get a fair few of our friendly voice actors there, which we all know and love. But the game, it's not a bad game. It's got a lot of good intentions. It just feels a lot of it was quite poorly executed.
Yeah.
And much like the Sword Art Online game that you've just been talking about, it very much feels like this was a PlayStation 3 or PlayStation Vita game that they've kind of just thrown on the PS4.
Yeah. Did you also feel that it was just wasted potential as well?
Yeah. It's just, maybe it's the high, like I said, I mean, don't go into this expecting Valkyria Chronicles, but the only people who are going to pick this game up are going to be fans of Valkyria Chronicles.
Yep. So it's a lot like Sword Art Online, Axel World versus Sword Art Online.
Yeah, the sad thing about this is, I think this is going to be the end of the line for the series.
I don't know. I mean, Valkyria Chronicles is historically flown under the radar, as it is.
Yeah, I mean, the one they released on the PS4, the remake, that did pretty well in sales. I mean, this went up against Crash Bandicoot remake.
Yeah.
But I don't know, it just feels like this has a lot of bad stigma around it. It's not a bad game by any means, but it's not a great game.
Yeah.
But I kind of feel that they might look at this and just kind of think, yeah.
I don't know. I don't think it's a franchise breaker, per se.
No.
I don't think it's bad enough for it to be called a franchise breaker. A lot of people seem to have... I know that there are people who hate Valkyria Revolution because it's not Valkyria Chronicles. But it's like we had this discussion earlier before the show. I mentioned to Mark, Valkyria Revolution is a bit like Gundam. You know, the Gundam anime and manga series, they're not connected by any kind of overarching storyline in a very literal sense. And for some of them, there is a connecting storyline, you know, kind of a background story. But the main thing that connects one Gundam series to another Gundam series is the fact that there are Gundams in them.
Mm-hmm.
And in the same way...
It's got the Valkyrias, and it's got the Ragnite, and it's got vague allusions to the older games with you shooting stuff and all that.
Yeah, but the thing is, maybe this would have been better off if they basically just went straight up for a third-person action-adventure, you know, hack-and-slash action-adventure. Maybe try not to copy the Musou mechanic, because I've seen those copies of the Musou mechanic and they don't really work that well.
No. I mean, this is a true spin-off. I don't want to lump it with those games, but this is like the Triforce Heroes of Valkyria Chronicles. This is the Metroid Federation Force of Valkyria Chronicles. It's not bad games, but it's not really a true...
It's for the Valkyria fans. Chronicles. It's basically what I said. It's for the fans. It's not really for anyone else.
Yeah. The only thing that kind of baffles me, I mean, yeah, they're trying to do something new, but if it's for the fans, I can't understand why they couldn't have just done HD ports of the second and third game.
Don't ask me.
People want them. People are shouting for them. It's just kind of sitting there going, yeah, we know you want them.
I don't know. Not many people I know want them. But, you know. Anyway, is it my turn?
It's your turn.
And weirdly enough, we kind of saved the best for last.
Ooh.
Yes. Because I know some people aren't going to like this game, but screw you. I think this is a pretty decent game, pretty solid all round. God Wars, Future Past, or as it was called before, God Wars, Beyond Time. And the thing about this, right, this is out from NIS America, and it's developed by Kadokawa Games.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and it's out on the PS4 and the PS Vita. Now, I've played the PS4 version of this, and I've got to say, first off the bat, I like the style of it. Okay, yes, it is an anime style, but I like the aesthetic of it. It mixes with things. Right at the beginning, it has what looks like a... Do you remember the game 13 on the PS2? It had
a
comic book. It was like playing a comic book with the paneling and everything like that. This God Wars starts off with that kind of thing where you have kind of a motion comic going on, and then it cuts to an anime scene where you have a lady called Tsukuyomi, who is she is basically the priestess of Fuji, the mountain, and the mountain, the gods of the mountain are angry, and she has to sacrifice her daughter Sakuya to the volcano to bring about a period of calm.
Right.
And so Sakuya disappears in the volcano. Tsukuyomi is unhappy because she's forced to sacrifice her daughter. Spin on 13 years later, and you have Tsukuyomi's third daughter, Kaguya, who is locked up in a temple because apparently the mountain, Mount Fuji, is stirring again, and they may need another sacrifice, and she is apparently the chosen sacrifice. Right. But one of her friends, called Kintaro, who has a bear, yes, it's supposed to be that Kintaro from Japanese mythology, he breaks her out of prison, and he says, let's go see the flowers and the mountains that you want to see. She wants to see the world with her own eyes. And so, cue the combat. Now, I'm going with the combat first before I go with the rest of the story, because the story is kind of important. Right, now this is basically a kind of an isometric tactical RPG in the style of, say, Final Fantasy Tactics or Tactics Ogre, that sort of thing. And the weird thing is, Kadokawa actually attempted a couple of years ago to do a tactical RPG, a tactical combat RPG, in kind of the way that Valkyria Chronicles was, and they called it Natural Doctrine. And it was out.
I remember hearing about that one.
Yeah, it was out on the PS3, and it was ambitious and interesting and innovative in its approach, but ultimately kind of flawed as well. But it was an interesting approach to the whole tactical RPG. But after all of that, they've kind of gone backwards and returned to the classic formula of isometrics and squares and moving around the map and, you know, forward, backward, left, right. And if you attack from the back, you do like double damage, blah, blah, blah. It's all very tactical and very, very kind of Disgaea, very Final Fantasy Tactics, Tactics Ogre, blah, blah, blah. Yeah? So they've kind of gone for the safe route. But that doesn't mean to say that the game looks boring. The game is very, very colourful. The character designs are interesting. Some enemies are just repetitions of the same thing, you know, but that's kind of part and parcel for these sorts of games anyway.
Yeah.
The environments are actually really pretty. A lot of the areas where you actually fight are actually really nicely detailed, and it gives kind of a lush vibrancy to the combat, but the combat ultimately is still turn-based tactical RPG. Now, each of the characters, and there are a lot of characters that you'll be able to have in your team, each of the characters has kind of three jobs, which then open up sub-jobs, which then open up a particular a passive job, which is permanent and you can't change. And you can swap between each of the three jobs. You get different equipment, you get different skills, everything like that. And it gives a lot of variety to kind of the back end of the game when you're tailoring your character, stuff like that. But that isn't what keeps you coming back to the game, because ultimately that's quite lackluster as well,
right?
It's very shallow. It's not enough to keep you coming back to the game. What does keep you coming back to the game, and what will keep you coming back to the game, especially if you are into your folklore and mythology, or you want to know more about Japanese culture. Now, okay, I say that quite loosely. This is a very loose interpretation of a couple of things. One of them is known as the Kojiki, right? And the Kojiki is the Kojiki is known as the Records of Ancient Matters, or an account of ancient matters, and it's also known as the Furukata Fumi, and it's the oldest extant chronicle in Japan, dating back from the early 8th century, and it was composed by Ono Yasumaro at the request of the Empress Genmei. It's a collection of myths about the origin of the four home islands of Japan and the kami. And, this is basically God Wars, Future Past, basically is the Kojiki and the accompanying text, the Nihon Shoki, which is the Chronicles of Japan, which goes back to about, goes back around 1,000 years or just over 1,200 years, something like that. And that is kind of an elaborate and detailed, it's more elaborate and detailed than the Kojiki, and it's the older, and it's kind of an important tool for historians and archaeologists, as it includes the most complete extant historical record of ancient Japan, right?
Yeah.
So this is heavily influenced, this game is heavily influenced by those two ancient texts, and that kind of shows in the fact that the main character is called Kaguya.
Yeah.
Now, Ghibli recently, in the last couple of years, released their film, The Tale of Princess Kaguya. And the titular character from there is also the titular character from here.
Oh, cool.
Right? So you have... What you'll find in this game is you'll find a lot of characters from Japanese mythology, or a lot of names from, from Persona games or other Shin Megami Tensei games, or, you know, things from anime. You'll recognize these names, but you might not realize that these names were actual characters in the Kojiki or the Nihon Shoki.
Yeah.
Right? And that gives this game a very, very different spin, because it's kind of like playing Japanese mythology and history. And yes, these are very, very loose interpretations of these characters, of these stories, you know? And it is gamified to the nth degree, but it's kind of fun, you know? It's kind of fun seeing these characters that I am actually very familiar with through anime and manga and other video games, right? And through just reading these myths and legends of ancient Japan. You know, it's kind of fun playing this game and playing with these characters, or playing as these characters, or fighting these characters against other characters that I recognize. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, from what it sounds like, I mean, I don't want to see it too much. Like, it sounds like a Final Fantasy Tactics version of Okami.
Kind of, yeah. It is kind of that. I mean, the characters are humanoid, except for Kuma, who is basically a bear that has kind of become like a demigod type thing by living on Mount Fuji for so long. This is the thing. It really is an interesting game from the storyline perspective, from the narrative perspective. Everything else is kind of, everything else is just there because it is. Everything else is kind of, I'll be honest, in comparison to the story, everything else is kind of bland. The thing that will keep you coming back to this game is the story. And I'll be honest, of the games that we've had today, aside from ARMS, I'd say God Wars, Future Past, is the most fun to play. I started playing it and I just got absorbed in the story. You know, once I realized where the story was going, because when Kintaro appears, you know, when Kaguya says the name Kintaro, I was thinking, hang on, is that Kintaro as in Kintaro, the one with the axe and the bear, or is it Kintaro as in Saruman Kintaro? I don't think it's Saruman Kintaro, not the right setting for it. You know, he's a Saruman. This is like Mizuho, which is ancient Japan, you know, or before Japan was Japan kind of thing. So probably not him. Don't see any ties. But I do see a bear, and I do see a guy who's supposed to be a fighter. It is that Kintaro. I thought he was supposed to be fat, but this guy isn't fat. He's muscular.
He ran it off.
Yeah, these were the thoughts that were going through my head when I started playing this game, right? And obviously, you've got characters like Tsukuyomi, you've got Kaguya, you've got all of these other characters. One of the other interesting things as well, you've got basic jobs like warrior, priest, magician, that sort of thing, yeah? But these can branch into more specialized classes like samurai, monk, you know, ninja, that sort of thing. But then you've got the advanced professions, which, you know, these are the ones that can't really be changed that much. And they're like Confucian or Herculean.
Oh, that's cool.
Which is an interesting angle to take. The skill trees in this are pretty easy to activate. There's, you know, the equipment is pretty easy as well. There's all sorts of options on the back end. But the main thrust of this, the main reason you'll play it, is literally the story. And that is not a common thing for me to say about a wibbly Japanese RPG, right?
Yeah, I mean, from what I'm sounding, I mean, I'm assuming if you said it was UCS Nippon NIS.
NIS America, yeah.
So it's the guys who brought us Disgaea?
Well, it's NIS who are distributing it. They're the publisher. But the developer is Kadokawa.
Right, yes, you said that, didn't you?
You know, and this is...
So it plays a lot like Disgaea with more, like, Okami characters.
Yeah, it's got more of an... I wouldn't say Okami aesthetic. It's got more of a colourful aesthetic. It's not as cartoony as Disgaea is. It's not as anime as Disgaea is. It has anime cutscenes that's, you know... The characters, when you see them in the talking heads scenes, they're obviously anime characters. I'm curious to know what happened to everyone's noses in this game, because nobody seems to have one. They have a bump. But we won't go there. It's easily ignored in the light of, for once and for a change and for a blessed change, a good story in a wibbly Japanese game.
Oh, that's good.
And... I am actually surprised that I am saying that, right?
Yeah.
I mean, if you think about it, Valkyria Revolution should have had a good story, shouldn't it?
Yeah, it probably does. It's just hidden under too many cutscenes.
My point exactly. But this, it gets right into it, and the story progresses and carries on and carries on. It, you know, and that's the lovely thing about it. It's not trying to be pretentious. Kadokawa and NAS America have presented an actual game that is interesting, that doesn't drag, that will keep you coming back because you want to find out more about the story. It has combat and controls that are familiar. Yes, okay, they're nothing innovative and cool and stuff like that, but they don't have to be. Everything is done quite well, you know, so it doesn't have to be groundbreaking or anything like that. It just has to be done well and have an interesting story, and that's exactly what this game is.
Sounds like a lot of fun. So is that PS4 or is it Vita?
That's PS4 and PS Vita. But yeah, that's God Wars Future Past. I like it, and I'm sure that other people, if they give it a chance, and if they're into finding out more about Japanese history, Japanese mythology, or they already like that sort of thing, then give it a try. Yeah, okay, it's a very, very loose interpretation of the Kojiki and the Nihon Shoki, but it's enough to spark your interest.
Sounds good.
Yeah. So anyway, that's your lot for today. We've had four games. Mark has done Arms and Valkyria Revolution. I've done Axel World versus Sword Art Online, Millennium Twilight, and God Wars Future Past. We'll be back next time with some more games and stuff like that. But in the meantime, if you are listening through Audio Boom or iTunes or the podcast provider of your choice, then subscribe and it'll keep you up to date with all of our latest episodes of Press X. We are part of the Geek Show Podcast Network, and that is also available on Audio Boom, iTunes, and the podcast provider of your choice. So subscribe to that as well. We have loads of shows that are really great, like Keyframe, which is literally the best animation podcast you could listen to.
Yeah, right? It's a lot of fun.
I mean that quite literally because I've listened to just about every animation podcast.
So yeah.
I'm not biased at all. I'm not biased. No, Keyframe is literally the best animation podcast you could listen to. We're not biased at all, are we, Mark?
Not at all.
No. Four Panel, the best comic books and comic book and manga podcast you can listen to. Again, I'm not biased about that one at all. Literary Loitering, which we're not sure what that is anymore, but it is about arts and books. I don't know what Literary Loitering is anymore. Do you know what it is? Because I don't, and I do that.
I have no idea.
You've listened to it. You know what it's like.
It's just if you want to hear some people having some witty bants.
What is witty bants?
Witty banter.
How much more effort does it take to say banter?
I don't know. I'll try to be cool for the kids.
That is not cool. Anyway. If you want to get in touch with us, you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Google+, and various other places on the internet. Or just email us, studio@thegeekshow.co.uk. And that's it for today. We'll be back again next time. But until then, I have been Rob.
And I've been Mark.
And we'll see you on the next slightly strange edition of Press X. We may talk about games. We may not. We haven't decided yet.
We probably will.
Yeah. Games will probably feature in there somewhere.
I hope so.
Bye.
Bye.